Hi, hello guys, it's Amber here and welcome back to This May Get Hairy. This is our third episode. In this episode, I chat to the one and only Swirl. Swirl is an amazing content creator. I'll make sure that I put her handle underneath so you guys can check her out. And I want her to brighten up your day as much as she did mine. And she's just truly unique. And it was amazing to be able to have a chat with her. Swirl has trichotillomania. And if you're not sure what that is, I promise you at the end of this podcast, you'll be an expert. So we speak about everything to do with her upbringing, what it was like being hair-free, what it's like being hair-free in Italy versus London. And also we just chat about her life's goal and to help other people who are going through trichotillomania. When she was growing up, she didn't have the help that she needed. So now she's really trying to change that. So I just find this overall conversation so educational and so inspiring. And I hope you guys do too. So introducing the one and only Miss Swirl. Swirl, which is the most beautiful name ever. Thank you so much for coming here to come on This May Get Hairy. It's so nice to see you again.
You're looking so beautiful.
Lovely to see you again too. You're looking gorgeous as the last time I saw you. I remember we were in that random church. Do you remember?
Of course.
Random church, maybe like 3 years ago. And I think that was the first time meeting you. I think we'd spoken on Instagram previously. But all I remember is this bundle of joy and light walking in the door. You were dressed so cool. You had your fun makeup on and you just exuded this radiant light. And I was just automatically drawn to you. And then when the camera came on you, honestly, I don't think I've ever seen someone, how do I say it, like so natural in front of the camera. I just saw that transformation happen as soon as you got in front of that camera and you just made every single wig look amazing. We were there to model some of my wigs and my wig brand, and you just brought so much life to that day and so much joy to that day. So I was just so excited when I was doing this podcast. I thought 100% I just want to get Swirl back in here just to be able to see you again and to be able to have the chats. But I've never gotten an opportunity to really sit down and speak to someone who has trichotillomania. It's always been something that's been on the periphery of my life. When I first ever went into this hair clinic to do like a steroid treatment, this is when I was 15 years old, the girl next to me had trichotillomania. And I remember I was saying, so why are you in here? Both of us getting steroids in our hair. And she was like, well, I have trichotillomania. And I remember being like, what on earth is that? And then obviously we'd go there every single Wednesday and she'd be next to me every single Wednesday. So she used to tell me a little bit more about it. And obviously from having the wig shop, I have lots of amazing women coming in who also have trichotillomania, but I've never really gotten the opportunity to deep dive into the condition and kind of hear from someone's point of view. So that's what I'm hoping to do today. But also, I don't really know that much about you, Swirl, especially you when you were a young ting. So I'm hoping to just kind of for you to explore your condition as well with me, and also just tell me a little bit about what you were like when you were younger. And I'm hoping you can tell us a bit about that when you're back in Italy. Isn't that right? Whereabouts in Italy? And what were you like as a kid growing up? I'm so intrigued.
Italy, Florence. So that's where I was born. And Florence is one of the most beautiful cities I've ever been in the entire world. If you have to visit one place in Italy and you are an art lover, or you just simply want to experience the Renaissance and what an Italian lifestyle is, Florence is definitely the place where to go. It's a small city compared to Milan or Roma, but you can walk in the city center and it's just like walkable in a few hours. You've kind of walked through the city center, and the hills around are just as beautiful. And it's called Chianti, which is the countryside where everybody goes for wine. Me, I was a very happy child. My family is one of those big families. I have three siblings and they're all way older than me. So between me and the youngest is 14 years.
Wow.
And now they all have two kids each. I love it. And we all get along pretty well together. My parents are still together. They're now getting into their 80s, which is insane. So it was, you know, my family has always been this incredible place where everybody would come in and go. Mm-hmm. And it always felt like an open house. Yeah. And everybody was welcome to the table. Friends of friends, dogs, cats, whatever, whatever you were bringing. And yes, it's been always this beautiful, embracing harmony in the family.
I think I love that about Italy or Italians in general. That's one thing I notice. That's the place where me and Ben love to go to the most. And it is that within the culture, you see these big, long tables of everyone there talking over each other, but it's just so family orientated. And like you say, so open and so welcoming, which I absolutely adore.
Yeah, I hope it's still like that. I don't know that many families like mine anymore, but hopefully, you know, that's the culture that we also export or tend to export in other countries.
And amazing food as well, of course. And when we speak of, you know, Italian culture and Italian identity, when I think of Italian women, I think of, you know, Sophia Loren, Monica Bellucci, and all these women are curvy and have long, luscious black hair, and hair seems to be so wrapped around sexuality and femininity. And I definitely think from an outsider looking in, that's quite high up on the list or priority, having long, luscious, thick hair. Is that something that, am I right in that thinking?
I think so. I think if you look at history, hair for women has always been part of our sensuality. If you look at, for example, films, sometimes you don't need any words for a scene that's going to get hotter. There's a woman walking in and her hair is just like up in a bun or something. And the moment she takes the bun out and the hair falls on her shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's like that sign of I'm going to get loose. And that's exactly the representation of hair throughout art and films and any mean of representation that sets a kind of standard mm-hmm. in people's minds.
Yeah.
So for me, when I started pulling my hair and I was very, very young, it was between my 11 and 12 years old. Of course, I didn't have that concept yet. I had the concept of I want to be a princess.
Of course, a princess, it's Rapunzel, it's long hair.
Exactly. I guess it only hit me that that was a part that it wouldn't be accessible to me when I went to high school and we were talking about the hair representation in history and art and literature. And that felt very scary to me because I was like, does it mean that I am not lovable or like men won't look at me? I was in a very straight phase back then. But yeah, it was that concept of, I still remember the lesson that our teacher gave us and we're literally talking about hair. And she was like, because it represents sensuality in literature. I was like, oh.
What does that mean for me?
What does it mean for me?
It's also wrapped up in, you know, fertility when, for some strange, bizarre reason, that when we see a woman with this thick, luscious hair, it's meant to give off the idea that that woman is really, really fertile. So hence, subconsciously, the man will then desire that woman more because of that. If you take us back to, some people might be listening to this and not know what trichotillomania is, or they will know what it is, but they won't perhaps know the terminology around it. So can you just kind of give a brief overview in your words what trichotillomania is? I know there's different severities of it, but it'd be great to know from you.
Yeah, of course. It's basically an obsessive compulsive disorder. And instead of being focused on something external to you, like, for example, some people count numbers or, you know, do have tics or stuff that they do outside of themselves, this is focused on your body. Okay. And that's why it's called differently from obsessive compulsive disorder. It's called trichotillomania BFRB, mm-hmm. So body-focused repetitive behavior.
Body-focused repetitive behavior, okay.
And this incorporates biting your nails, biting your cheeks, pulling your hair, and dermatillomania, which is when you pick your skin. If you have any cuticles on your fingers that are like poking out and you start biting at them and then you keep going, etc. So these are things that usually are very common and they spark from something that feels to us and to our brain as imperfect. Yeah. There's something that stands out. Mm-hmm. And for hair, for example, is a hair that is thicker than yeah. other hair. And it stands out. And you can find this in women with hair, with eyebrows, with lashes, and with men or people with a beard. They do that with their beard or their eyebrows as well. And it can be just, you know, you touching it or twirling the hair in between your fingers. But then there's the act of pulling, which yeah. then brings you to this being kind of an obsessive thing.
Yeah, because that's the thing. So many people I know in my personal life, I know, you know, I have it. I do the thing with my cuticles when I haven't been to the manicurist in a while and I start to get dry cuticles. I'm going to pull that massively. And so many of my girlfriends in my life all do the exact same thing. My eyebrow, my brother pulls out his eyelashes. So as you say, it's taking it from pulling it a bit or twirling it a bit to then actually going that step further and pulling it out. Did yours start from the beginning as something that was just, did you play at the beginning and then it kind of gradually became worse, or it kind of just started from the beginning as pulling?
It was overnight. That's so scary too. It's I was playing with my cousin and we were holding eyelashes in our between our fingers to make wishes, and we were looking for fallen eyelashes or eyelashes that was about to fall. And then from that day, I kept going back to my eyelashes and pulling them. And I just felt this sense of relief. And I actually didn't know that that was something wrong to do. In my mind, I was 11.
Yeah,
I was like,
it probably felt good. But that's the thing; it does kind of feel good. That slight bit of pain—it's like self-harm, and in a way, that kind of little bit of adrenaline you get when it happens, you probably didn't even realize. But I'm sure that was going on in your mind at the time.
Definitely, my awareness was down to zero at that point. Like, I did not know what was happening. I was just doing something that felt very natural, and then my brain kind of kept going there because it needed it. And by the time I was 11, I had been through a few stressful years, and it wasn't because of my family or anything around me. It was just that I was a very anxious kid and everything would stress me out. And I was extremely sensitive and emotional as a kid. So if you said no to me, for example, it wasn't like saying no to any other kid. I would take it personally to a level I was like,
heartbroken.
I've done something horrible. I'm wrong. I am, you know, I don't know. My brain would just go
take
places.
It to these extreme places, perhaps.
Yeah. And this act of trying to remove imperfections from your body is just your brain cooling you down and protecting you from this overwhelming emotion that sometimes you just don't have the time or the tools to manage, especially if you are a kid. So that's how I started. And then I started with my lashes. Then it went to my eyebrows. And then I went to this big, huge professor of psychology that was like this luminary of psychotherapy.
Okay. This was in Italy at the time.
This was in Italy. After my parents freaked out because I didn't have any more lashes and eyebrows, of course. And he looked at me and laughing, he said, "Oh, I'm so glad you didn't start with your hair."
Oh, God. Well, I'm going to now.
And I was like, thank you for the idea. Yeah. And that was it. Basically, he gave me the idea to maybe it would have happened anyway.
So when you're doing it or when you were doing it then, are you consciously pulling, or you kind of will catch yourself an hour into pulling and then realizing?
Maybe not an hour.
Yeah.
But you definitely start without realizing.
Okay.
You do it when you're doing something else, usually. Yeah. If you have an imperfection on your face, for example.
A spot. You're going to burst
spot,
it.
Yeah. And you're like, and you keep going to it. And the bigger it is, the more you just like go touch it. And you're like, oh my God, this needs to go. Yeah. That's the feeling. But it's not that whenever you're playing with it, you're actually so conscious and aware of what you're doing. You're probably doing something else. You're reading, you're watching TV, you're talking in a meeting or something, or you're studying. So it's definitely not conscious at first. And then when you focus on it and you're like, oh, I squeezed it.
Yeah.
You know?
Let's go back for more. And when did you start then, after your man said about your hair, then you got that grand idea to start on the hair in your head? How long was that period of time? Was there a certain amount of time where you just started pulling till it was all gone? Did you take it? Was there just patches and it would regrow? And then you do, like, how did that pattern work when you moved onto the head on your head?
Well, at that point, I knew that I was doing something wrong and that that brought shame and guilt. So I was hiding what I was doing all the time. And the more I was hiding it, the more I was doing it. And the more I was doing it, the more I would hide in completely from the rest of the world and just isolate myself, doing things that were just me time. So probably playing video games was one thing, for example, that I was doing. And whilst I was playing video games, I was pulling even more. So it was kind of a cycle. Looking back, if there had been more awareness about this and people to actually help me out with the right knowledge and the right practices, I would have probably not gotten to a point where my hair doesn't grow back because I've pulled all of the roots. But back then, it started with the hair that felt weird, and then it just went to the whole head. And were periods of time where I was able not to pull, but it was a huge effort. And then it took me months to grow back this tiny bit that then took me a second.
Of course, to pull out again. You have a bad day and you just go for it.
Yes.
Because I look at you now and you are beautiful and hair-free just like me, and you have no eyebrows just like me. So it's like seeing a reflection, but you do have beautiful eyelashes. So they came back. And do you ever... Now, do you still pull?
I do, yeah.
You do.
Yeah, I do pull. And sometimes they're fuller, sometimes they're less full. Yeah. It's not a problem for me anymore. Yeah. And my eyebrows don't actually grow back. My hair doesn't grow back. And whatever grows back, I shave. Mm-hmm. And I just keep it like that. The less hair I have, the less I can pull. And I feel like right now we've sort of reached a balance for which if I pull, I don't really care.
Yeah, of course.
No one around me cares.
No one.
And this mania that I have doesn't make me unlovable or less beautiful or less good at what I do. Do you know what I mean? It's completely that like these symptoms are completely detached from my persona and my value, which is something that I reached.
Oh my goodness, I'm sure that
in
was
20 years.
I'm sure, but that's probably taken you so much to kind of get to that point. And just kind of taking us back a bit, when you were growing up in Italy and you were hair free, what was it like? Talk us through what it was like in school, dating, mm-hmm. teenage years, and then we can kind of get to where you've come to now, which is so amazing. But I'm sure there were so many years of just trying to get through. If you want to talk us through some of that.
First, I didn't have any representation to look up to. All of the people that I knew that were hairless only were coming from chemotherapy. There wasn't even alopecia. It was like nothing. Or we didn't speak about it. I wasn't exposed to anything that was kind of international because I didn't speak English, so my parents couldn't really research. So everything that was done in Italy with the means and knowledge we had. And growing up, luckily, I've always met people that always protected me, knowing that I had a problem. It was visible and it wasn't right to bully me or make me notice it.
That's so, a blessing. It was the same for me. I don't think I would have gotten through my school days and with my alopecia without having that strong group of girls in my life. They helped me so much, and knowing that I had them like behind me made a massive difference. So I feel like that's such a huge blessing to have those people in your corner when you're going through something like that when you're growing up.
And not only that, I had a group of girlfriends, but also I had a group of boys as well. And the fact that I was so protected and loved and cherished by boys as well always made me feel valued somehow, or like I was still attractive. I was still, you know,
desired.
Desired, yeah, which when
that.
You're a teenager with the hormones that you have,
that's
around,
what all you want. That's what you want.
You're like, yes, I need to be visible. And I don't know. It was definitely a blessing. It was very difficult though. I because the love that I was receiving was always from an external source and never from myself or within myself. Every time I would look at myself, I would only have hatred words towards me or the way I was, what I was doing to myself. And I really felt alone in this. I wasn't sure. I thought it was like one, it's a very rare disorder that I only have in Italy. Not true. I felt absolutely abnormal and guilty all the time, full of shame, full of resentment. It was depressed, anxious, and I spent the beautiful years of my teenagehood to try and hide everything, hide all the time. And
it's exhausting, isn't it?
It's exhausting, it's draining. It's so hard. And you live on a level of alert all the time.
In case people will find out.
In case people will find out.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you never chill. you never chill. Everything could, you know.
Which also doesn't help with the pulling either. So it's like chicken and an egg. Did you ever play with wigs or try and like hide and cover and draw on eyebrows, eyelashes, things like that?
We tried with extensions at first, but I pulled them too. I only got to explore wigs later on in life in my 20s. Before then, I always was wearing a bandana.
Yeah.
And the bandana was so tight on my head that I had scars and like my ears were bleeding.
No.
Yeah. And that's just because it was so tight and I was wearing it at night during the day, every day, 24/7. Yes. So I was hiding and damaging myself at every level. And I wish I had more representation of women like me with, you know, a beautiful life.
Yes.
A hairless life or like a playful life to look up to and say, oh, actually, that could be me.
Totally. And it doesn't have to be this amazing celebrity special life. It's just a life. Like you say, a happy life where she's just doing everything she wants to do. That's what I always say. And when I see other women, hair-free women like yourself, just living their life and sharing when they can, it makes such a massive difference. Because I, like you growing up, there was no representation. There was no hair-free women. And when there was a hair-free woman, either the media would slam them saying they've lost all their good looks or they had just gone through treatment, so they had just lost their hair. So it's obviously that whole different kind of narrative too. So it is, I think we can take for granted how important that is to see other hair-free women, isn't it? It's amazing to be able to see it.
It's, to me right now, it's everything, absolutely. When I saw you on Amazon campaign and then you did another one, what was it, Debenhams or was it another one?
John Lewis.
John Lewis. I was like, yes! Go get it, girl. I was like, thank you, so happy. It made me so happy. I was in bliss and joy. I was like, yes, yes, we need more of that. We need just to normalize this type of stuff. And unfortunately, we still see hairless women as sick most of the times or having to bring this type of disorder with them. There's a reason behind why you are
hairless. Yeah.
Hairless.
Yeah.
And it's, most of the time it's true. There is a reason. But that shouldn't define the person itself, you know. At the end of the day, I mean, you sell wigs. It's just hair.
Yeah, exactly. And they wigs to me, we can touch a bit more of this because you said you did explore them in your 20s. But, you know, for a long time, they were my armor. They were my safe space. Mm-hmm. They were a way to exist in the world when I wasn't ready to exist in the world as me. I couldn't do it. So they were my haven to be able to just be. And I truly believe at the time when, you know, it's been 15 years when I was coming up with the modeling world or just the world generally, I don't think being hair free was accepted. So I felt like I needed to have the wigs to be able to get a job, to be able to try to model in the industry. I wouldn't have been able to 15 years ago to say, hey, what about the idea of me not modeling with my wigs? I would have ran a mile, do you know? So they're a wonderful object, a wonderful tool to use if a woman needs them and desires them and they need them in that very moment. But it'd be wonderful to get to a place where it's a choice to wear them, not a need for most women. But that's a long journey to get to be able to choose instead of need it, you know.
I think I got to a point with wigs when I was able to, this is hard to say maybe, but I was able not to be attached to the wig. So I didn't need the wig, but I wanted my wig. And that's that's the point of getting to a place where you don't need to hide anymore. You're just playing with yourself.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to get there. So hard. It takes such a long time. I think eventually everyone gets there, especially with age. Yes. It kind of get better because you don't feel societal pressure that much anymore. You're like, you know, I'm tired.
I'm too tired of it. What helped you get to that point? What helped you really?
To me, it was my being diagnosed with the fact that I couldn't get any transplant and my hair wouldn't grow back.
Okay. You're like, right, let's just deal with this and move on.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically I was fighting to reach a goal up to a certain point in my 20s. And then my therapist told me, why don't you go to a trichologist to get your scalp checked and your hair checked? And I went there and they did. And they were like, sorry, girl, you're not growing hair back.
Okay.
And I was like, oh.
Was that because the follicles were so damaged?
Yeah, damaged. Yeah. Okay. And I was like, this completely reframes my intentions in life.
Yeah.
I've been fighting for the last 10 years to stop these symptoms so that I can grow my hair back. Mm-hmm. And now I can't. So what do I do? And then that's when I decided to explore different things. I started to shave rather than keeping the hair as it was.
Yeah, so it's in your control. You're choosing it. Yeah.
And then I started wearing wigs. And the funny thing is that I never was wearing normal wigs. I was wearing drag wigs.
I love it.
Every color, every shape. And probably every day I was changing. Up to a point, I had probably 80 wigs.
Fantastic. I love it. Like a wig, proper wig wardrobe vibes.
Yeah. Like it was, I mean, I could have probably participated to a drag race. Yeah.
Myself. RuPaul drag race. Yeah. Here you come.
Between the makeup that I was doing, they were like, it was literally drag without knowing about drag.
Because I love your style and the way you express yourself through your style and with makeup and with your wigs. Has that always been a part of your life? Yeah, you've always been so creative. Yeah.
Very creative from the very beginning. As soon as I discovered makeup, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I love painting my face and I would spend hours doing it. I would spend hours, you know, choosing the outfit that goes well with the wig, that goes well with the makeup, or starting from one and then ending up with three. It's it's always been a creative outlet for me. And I've only stopped wearing wigs during COVID. And then I just haven't gone back to it because I'm in like a phase where I'd rather be hairless than wearing wigs.
And how do you find in being a hairless woman in London versus when you're hair free back in Italy in terms of your, because I have lots of, weirdly, I have trauma when I go back to Dublin. I'll have a wig on or I'll have a hat on. I'll never walk around Dublin being my hair free self. I think it's because lots of people who knew me when I was going through it, when I see them for some reason, it kind of brings me back to my teenage self.
Interesting.
And I believe here, you know, I'm me, I'm Amber, I'm the Amber in my late 20s and my early 30s who I've created. So when people see me and they see my hair-free head, I perceive that they're looking at me in a different way, even though they're not, but it's all in my own head. And obviously London is the epicenter of difference and culture and fashion. So I don't give a shit what I look like walking around London, the state of me walking around half the time. Do you have any feelings towards that when you go back to Italy?
Yes. So definitely I get more attention and people stare way more than in London. In London, I literally walked around after some shoots, painted in every different color, being an alien.
Fantastic.
With prosthetics and or completely silver tip to toe, using the metro, and no one turned around. I definitely get a lot of compliments in London, but I get more compliments in Italy.
You get more compliments in Italy.
Yes.
Okay.
Whenever I walk down the street, like, especially men, not only women, but especially men are like, what is that? Like, they are attracted. They're curious. They want to talk to me. They stop
really?
Me. Yeah.
For some reason, naively, I would have thought it was the opposite for some reason. But I guess if they haven't seen it, they are so curious. They want to talk.
Yeah. I think it from before when I left to now is completely different because I am a different person.
For sure. So, of course. So what, because you're walking down with your head held high, so confident, owning yourself. They're just attracted to that. The fact that you have hair or not probably doesn't have much to do with it. They just want to talk to this vibrant energy, like what I mentioned at the start of this podcast. They want to talk to that. Do you know?
Yeah, definitely. Because that would happen before. But because I'm so exposed right now, they feel like, you know, they want to know.
It's a talking point, isn't it?
The Italians are very curious. That's how we invented all the food that we did. Every time I walk down the street, I definitely get way more attention in Italy. And in a good way, like they stare and everything, but they don't like go, oh, poor her, or like, oh, she must be going through this and that. They're like, who are you?
I love it.
So that changed when I changed, when I started going out, you know, without a wig or without a hat and or a bandana. And I was just like, you know, just me being me.
It's a great feeling, isn't it?
Yes.
What do you find them? One of the misconceptions that I have definitely heard about people with trichotillomania is, and I'm sure you want to kill people who say it, who just say, why don't you just stop? I'm sure you've heard that. Why don't you just stop pulling? Why can't you just stop
breathing?
Yeah, exactly.
Try that.
Must be so challenging, the misconceptions around it. I'm sure you've had to come up against those time and time again with just stupid, naive comments like that.
Yeah, it all comes from people not knowing or not having the same experience. And I am very extremely understanding of everyone's background and where they're coming from. I never assume people know what I have or how to move around me or what to ask or what to say, because I know that there isn't enough awareness out there, and I'm working on it.
Yes, you are. You're doing an amazing job.
I am working on it. But yes, we can't just stop. It's not something that you do. If I could have stopped at this point, I would have a luscious full head of hair. And probably steal my eyebrows, but I was born in the 90s where eyebrows weren't a thing.
Exactly. What part of it do you miss the most? Because for me, my hair and my head don't really, I mean, I say I don't care. If it came back tomorrow, great. But it's the eyebrows for me that was the real killer. Eyelashes, don't care so much. I actually quite like the look of not having eyelashes, but if I could have anything back, I would love to have my eyebrows back.
Oh, I don't care.
Delighted.
I actually don't miss my eyebrows at all. I didn't have a relationship with my eyebrows at all. Hair, every time for some reason I let it grow back, because I don't know, for 5 days I've been sick or something, and if there is like a gush of wind from the window and something moves over my head, I freak out.
Okay.
I'm like,
get it off.
What's happening? What is this sensation over my head? It's just like, I'm not used to it. And so I go and shave it off already. So no, I don't normally miss anything. I think my lashes are the thing that I cherish the most, but I'm also used to my lashless life. Which in London can be very hard because it's a windy city and there is a lot.
I don't know about it, but it's only recently.
Dust.
So much. Only the past 2 years have I really noticed my nose. Do you have nose hair?
Yeah.
You have nose. I don't have any nose hair. So like bunged up, constantly dripping. Another guest we had on, she calls this the random snot that drips out of her nose angel drops. Because that's what her husband says. So that isn't such a pain, just constantly having stuff in your eye and your nose running. It's like,
it's crazy because you didn't have protection. So everything gets into your eyes.
Yeah. Do you have, if you don't mind me asking, because I have not a hair on my body anywhere except a couple of toe hairs randomly and like the odd like armpit hair. Is that something that you are drawn? Is that something that you were drawn to pull to, the hair on your body, or not so much?
So usually the areas are the face, the head, and armpits. The genital area is mm-hmm. also, because they're very thick.
I can imagine. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And the rest, no, because everything that is not patterned or textured or thick usually doesn't attract your hand.
Okay.
So yes, those are usually the most common parts where you pull. And that's just for trichotillomania. For dermatillomania, is a little bit everywhere, but arms, legs, and the face are usually the most attacked. Because you get like, for example, when you shave, you can get a...
like a scab? Ingrown
hair.
They're so fun to get out.
I know. But then if you keep digging... that's what happens with dermatillomania. You get a big scar
and sores, the end of it. Yeah. Of course.
So it's challenging, but I don't miss any of it.
How did you go about that journey of self-love after that moment when you were told that it couldn't come back? What did you do?
I think I waited for about 2 weeks, mourning, mourning my hair, mourning my process, my fight, my battle. And then one night I just took the bandana off and went out. And my friends got emotional. I didn't know what would happen because it's not that I announced it.
Of course.
I didn't make like an announcement party for it. But I just, you know, one day I was like, that's it. This is going to be me from now on. So I tried to regrow it because the doctor said, if you regrow it for a couple of years without pulling, we might see a change in your follicles. And as I tried to regrow it for my California trip, I went away for a road trip and it looked just awful. My hair looked awful. Oh my God. It looked like... old dying monkey.
Yeah, that's not the vibe that you want to go for. Being a hairless woman is much nicer than a patchy monkey.
Yeah, it was a very patchy monkey. And, you know, I tried, didn't really like it. And so when I came back from California, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to shave it all out. And so I did. And
isn't it amazing when we do make these decisions in our life, that's when the universe starts really kind of giving back to us in ways that we didn't even think were possible. Like, when did the fun modeling, content creation, fashion, that whole avenue and that whole world, when did that kind of start opening up along your hairless journey?
When I started to shave and show my, and then I was into wigs and like I had this very eclectic and eccentric and very visual persona, I started attracting a lot of attention from people. Yeah. And so I was attracting attention about like for my look itself, but also why was I like that? And so I started talking about it on Instagram. I got the attention of some news outlet. And so it grew. And I said, oh my God, people are interested in this. And then I got this message from a girl in Iran, and she also has trichotillomania, and it was like the first early Instagram account, and she was like, I also have trichotillomania, but I don't show myself because of modesty. So she was covered.
Oh, I see.
And she was like, my family knows about this, but of course no one's
talking about it.
Yeah. And I know I have to find a husband. And I'm just so scared because whenever that happens and my family decides on someone and they don't see me. Mm-hmm. But when I will have to like face intimacy with this person, what will they think of me? Will they give me back to my family?
Of course. And hair in that culture means even more. It's like a whole different level. I think us as white women don't even realize within those cultures how important it is. It's like a currency almost.
Yeah. Look at like, you know, certain types of Jewish, they shave and they put a wig on. Like, hair
means everything.
It means everything. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I felt like I was lucky because I didn't have to go through that at least. And I was like, if I start this and it spreads to a point where it reaches women so far away from me and from different cultures, and they can also say, hey, look, this person here yes. is a supermodel and she's wearing her head like this.
Yeah. And she looks so amazing and she looks so happy and she looks, she's just living her life. Maybe I can too.
Yes. And so that yeah. literally lit a fire under me. And I was like, okay, let's do this. Like, if not just for me, but like there's women out there that are facing this and just for hair.
Yeah. It's crazy. So I guess everything you choose to do in whatever field you do, the kind of underpinning to that is doing it with that sense of purpose of by me just being me and putting myself out there, it's going to help other people.
For sure. And you're what you're doing, like you exposing yourself like that on commercials. Like I only have been booked for editorials so far because of my look. But you were like on big commercial ads. And I was like, yes, bring it on. We need to normalize this.
Yeah. It takes a second. I guess when you're in it, you don't realize how special it is. But I do remember the time when I went to go and see the John Lewis ad on Oxford Street and I got a girl to, I was standing by the billboard and she took a picture of me and I had my little hat on and I just took my hat off and standing next to it. And then when I left, I just started sobbing because it's only every now and then you can actually hit what that actually means to you, but actually hit them, what that actually means that, you know, I was just there, a hair-free woman, not singing and dancing about my hair loss. I was there in yoga gear, just stretching my arms up for a yoga wellness commercial for John Lewis, but it was out there. And I would have, when I was 15, how much I would have adored to have seen that, how much of an actual game changer that would have been, that I would have known that, okay, it's going to be okay. And we can take for granted all these things that we do. And you probably take for granted all the things you do. But by every single post that you do, it's affecting someone in a positive way. And it's such a beautiful thing. Do you ever find that you... I was chatting to a girl before, a beautiful woman who has albinism. So we were having this whole conversation around, you know, fashion and diversity and trying to navigate that whole space of like not going for brands that you feel are, they want you there just to tick a box, and how it's so beautiful when you are just hired because they love your look. How do you navigate that whole field of making sure that you're choosing authentic brand partnerships to work with?
Usually I work with, it's difficult because I don't work with brands right now. I usually work with makeup artists or photographers or other creatives, and they usually want my look because they have crazy ideas.
Yeah, and they have a free fall. You know, my husband said at my wedding speech, it's a whole joke, but he basically calls me Mrs. Potato Head, you know, from like Toy Story, that they can make us up like anything they want.
literally. So I've done a lot of movies yeah. for this. Aliens for Marvel and so
what was that like? Tell me about that. That must be so hard.
Hard.
Long hours, no?
Long hours, long makeup. Fun. But sitting 14 hours with a 3 kilos...
Alien prosthetic
on your head. Sometimes you can't eat. Sometimes you can sit. Sometimes you can not rest or like move your face or laugh or eat or drink. Like
it's full on.
Yeah, it's full on. So it's hard, but it was a fun time, I have to say.
Great.
The rest is just like, I usually collaborate with everybody. I love collaborating with makeup brands and fashion brands, especially new designers, up and coming. I still have to hit the big brands. I don't know if that will ever happen, but
it will. I hope absolutely will.
It will. I would love to work with the big brands.
Who'd be your dream brand to work for? Do you have one at the top of your list?
Victor and Rolf.
Yeah, fab.
Oh my God, yes. I would love to. And then Alexander McQueen, probably.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I would love to do the high fashion stuff. Westwood. Vivian. That was my dress for my wedding. I got to wear a Vivian Westwood. I honestly felt like a princess. I went into that space, and having that corset that's just made for a woman's figure, I was just like, this is the most heavenly thing on earth. I know for a fact you'll 100% work for those people. I know you will.
Maybe one day. I don't know. For now, I'm trying to get into more of the mental health talk online.
Space, yeah.
And space. I'm trying, because of the community that I'm building in Italy, with these psychotherapists that I found through the American Association for BFRBs.
Brilliant.
We connected a couple of years ago, and then we started our own podcast.
Fab.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Ma che brutto vizio.
Oh, now you've got to try and say it. That's going to butcher it.
It means such a bad habit, which is what we used to get told about pulling hair or like biting your nails. You know, if you were biting your nails,
it's a bad habit. Yeah.
It's a bad habit. But it's not. It's not. It's a disorder / behavior compulsion. So that's how we called it. And the first season was just us two talking about it and being upfront about things. That's
fantastic. Does she have it also, or she's just an expert within the field?
She has it also,
yes. Okay.
And then the second season, which is the one that we're pushing right now, we talked to 15 therapists. They have different types of therapy.
Okay.
But they all treat BFRBs.
Oh, so tell me about some of those therapies. I'd be so curious to know what kind of avenues one can go down if they are facing themselves that...
Oh,
sorry,
so many. Because I think this is not a one-way street and there's no cure.
Yeah.
At least they haven't found it yet.
It's the same with alopecia too, no? It's just, yeah, there's no cure. It's just deal with it.
And but it's also like very dependent on you and you only. Like something that can work for you, but doesn't work for somebody else. And all the treatments that they give you or recommendations, etc., might benefit me, but might not completely, like zero, they might not work for you.
Yeah, totally.
So we always recommend to try different types of therapy to see, you know, what works for you. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're a teenager, you don't have therapy terminology within you yet. You don't have that much awareness of what's happening within your emotions. You don't have tools to face it. And on top of everything else, you have school, being a teenager.
Yeah, you've life, hormones.
Hating your parents and hating life and not understanding why the world is so bad. You know, there's so many things that you're going through. Plus, on top of that, mental health. So it's a lot to navigate. And that's what we're trying to achieve. We're trying to educate parents. And we're trying to give, you know, people choices. We can't cure them. We can't do anything for them, but we can provide information and we can provide different professionals that can help them in their area or online. And that's, you know, the best we can do.
God, that's so amazing, Swirl. I know so many people. God, I think that's... So many people will find that so helpful, because I don't know about you, a lot of the time it's even more challenging for the parents a lot of the time, because they don't know what to do. And they wish they could take that pain away from the kids. They wish they could be the ones who pull, or my parents, they wish they were the ones who were losing their hair. And again, it's that, it's not knowing and that lack of information. And because of this podcast and you putting out that information, that's going to be a game changer for so many people. And that's such incredible work. Well done, Swirl. That's so sick.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's really a type of purpose that keeps me on track.
From having the conversation with all those different therapies and therapists, did you want to go down any of the routes yourself and explore them, any of them again?
It was 15 hours of therapy for me. Wow. That session. It was like...
because an overload.
Every time you talk to a therapist for an hour and you're so vulnerable about things and like you ask questions and...
Oh, that's a wig head falling down.
And you ask questions and then they ask questions, etc. And we, with Francesca, my partner, we were saying, like, sometimes we got so emotional. We were like, this is so healing for us. It's incredibly healing. And we wish that could be the same for everybody else who watches this podcast. You know, that's our aim. And so we are expanding and promoting. We're doing a support group, which was, it didn't exist in Italy before. There's so many things that we're trying to achieve there that we didn't have when we were growing up in Italy. And now we are doing that for them. Hopefully that's going to change something. There is one in the UK, there is one in the US, there's one in Latin America, and one in Spain, but that's it.
Okay. So you're just, you're being the representation in Italy.
For Italy. Yes. That's we're incredible. Trying to do that.
You're a legend. That's very cool. Well, thank you just so much for being here, for bringing your amazing light, for being so open, so vulnerable, for educating me and so many others about trichotillomania. And I know whatever you do, all the brands you work with, the next steps that you'll take, you will just absolutely kill it because you are a light. And I just think you're amazing. And thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me today. You're an angel.
Same to you. Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much to Swirl for being so honest and so vulnerable. I really appreciate you. If you like what you heard, guys, then please do hit the follow button or subscribe. And of course, like always, if you'd like to get in touch, then please do email us thismakeithairy@gmail.com. Or of course, you can follow us on our social media on Instagram @AmberJeanShop. Until next time, guys, see you later.